And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. It is Friday, the 9th of May, 2025. I do hope you're very well indeed. You're very welcome along to today's edition of the 9 to Noon Show. And as always on a Friday, we have a Friday panel. I'll introduce them to you very, very shortly. We're going to be talking some of the big issues of the day and of the week. We want your views, of course, throughout the course of the next hour. 086 60 25,000, your WhatsApps and texts to that number, 07491 25,000, if you wish to give us a call, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And you can watch today's show as always on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on our Facebook pages, and on the X platform. Let's say good morning, Harry Walsh. Hi, Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Very, very good. Former deputy editor at the Donegal News. In studio with me, I have Christy Galligan, former Garda Sergeant. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning, Greg.
And also joining us is Brendan Byrne, CEO of Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association. Hi, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic and great to have you with us. Pope Leo will lead his first Holy Mass as pontiff this morning after already paying a surprise visit to see staff at his former residence. Robert Prevost's life changed forever on Thursday when he went from being one of 252 cardinals to the first ever American pope. He was chosen after just four rounds of voting in the Sistine Chapel, a conclave that lasted 25 hours. The 69-year-old's viewed as a continuity candidate to the legacy of Pope Francis when it comes to Catholic social teaching, and is understood to have shared Francis's views on migrants, the poor, and the environment. Brendan Byrne, I'll start with you. Do you have an opinion on what direction he will or should lead the church?
Well, the first thing you look at when a pope is elected, you look at the name that he takes, and he has taken Leo. So Leo the 13th was the workers' pope, and the pope that more than any other leader of his time, bearing in mind he was elected in 1878, and was in the papacy until 1903, but he championed workers' rights, he recognised trade unions at a time when no one was doing that globally. So I think that's a statement in itself. And if you look at our new Pope, Pope Leo XIV, he's very much into partnership and co-responsibility. And that's what we need in the church. The church isn't from the top up, it's from the bottom. It should be from the bottom up rather than the top down. So if he continues on that synodality that he has practiced and preached all throughout his life, then this is exactly what the church needs. And I think, as you said at the outset, he is a continuity candidate. He's a candidate also that has come up through the ranks very quickly. He was a bishop until 2014, and then he became a cardinal in 2022, I think. So he has been a fast mover within the ranks, but I think the fact that he's an American and he's the first English-speaking pope in centuries is also positive. So
it's quite
I would
interesting.
Have great faith in
him. He spoke Spanish, Latin, and Italian, and
he's
albeit
seven languages.
But he never spoke any English, albeit he's the first.
I think there's a procedure at the Urbi et Orbi address. It has to be in Latin because you're the Bishop of Rome as well as being the Pope of the Catholic Church.
Christy Galligan in studio with me here. What's your take on it, if you have one?
Listening to all of the media reports in relation to who could have been elected Pope, caught everybody by surprise. But I'm glad to see Prevost, because he's challenged, which I'm happy to see, challenged Trump in America and Vance in relation to their attitudes towards immigration and all of those policies there. And that's a very positive thing. I think you need to have a countermeasure to what Trump or Hegseth or Vance in America are doing right now at this present moment in time. And I think if he's taking up the mantle of Pope Francis, which he probably is, I think he's the happy medium between the conservative and liberals at the present moment in time. And that's what they want, that stability in relation to most things diplomatically and worldwide, where we have serious conflicts in Gaza, Ukraine, Sudan, and other places in the world. And I think he's a peacemaker, and he talked about peace several times during his Urbi et Orbi yesterday, and that's a very positive thing for me. And I think it's very positive things for the 1.5 million people of Catholics all around the world.
And just 69 too. So 69. He has, you know, if he continues to enjoy good health and he does look healthy, he could have quite a long tenure.
He could have quite a long tenure, and hopefully it's one that's positive. Now there is, as like everything else in the papacy, there is a little bit of background then too, where the relation to the where he oversaw or didn't oversee.
Well, there's question marks over the
sexual assaults.
Action he did or didn't take
at the time. So that's one of the things, and I think the church is trying to move on from that and trying to say hands up here, we got it wrong here, and hopefully they can move on from that.
Well, you can use that to your advantage too. That sounds terrible given the subject matter, but how he speaks going forward. Harry Walsh, do you have a view? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, yes, Greg. Just listening to Archbishop Eamon Martin yesterday evening, he described him being a friend of Ireland and calm, affable and approachable. And everybody's been scurrying this last 12, 18 hours trying to figure out who this man is and get a wee bit of background and what have you. But he seems to have wide experience, as I say. He's the first English speaker in a long, long time, brought up in North America, spent a lot of time in Peru in the last 2 years in Rome. So he's known, seemingly, as a very good listener, and he's a canon lawyer. So he does seem to have a lot of stuff on his side. He's known as a builder of bridges. And so hopefully the Catholic Church is going through a crisis at the moment, you know, one of many crises. So hopefully he'll be a firm hand on the rudder and somebody that'll point us in the right direction in the coming years.
There's always a Donegal connection. We haven't quite established it yet, but at some point there's no doubt.
Well, the very fact he was in Peru, the Diocese of Brafo sent priests to Peru in the 80s and 90s.
Don't I need something a bit stronger than that?
It's early yet. Give us an hour.
It will happen. It's just a case of what exactly we find. Okay. Any views on the new Pope, listeners? 086 60 25,000. Donegal County Council confirmed yesterday that a planning application for an IPAS centre at the Strand Hotel in Ballyliffin has been refused, much to the relief of locals. It was just one of over a dozen such applications this year which have or are being considered by the council. Many have spoken out about the creation of IPAS centres in the county, with concerns ranging from safety to inadequate local resources. I'll stay with you if that's all right, Harry. Do you have a view on this county's capacity to host more refugees or asylum seekers?
My mantra, quite simply, would be live and let live, Greg, but that doesn't answer your question. Looking at the figures, I think we're third behind Kerry with the number of refugees and asylum seekers we've taken at this point, all dotted along the Western Seaboard. And I mean, every town, nearly every town and village in the county has some form of facilities. And as you rightly say, the line being trotted out is inadequate local infrastructure and facilities, and not enough Gardaí, not enough schools, not enough doctors, etc., etc. So in particular to Ballyliffin, I don't know enough about it, Greg, but as a county, as I say, I'd be of the mantra, live and let live, and see where that takes us.
What does that mean, though, Harry, not being...
Oh, no, exactly. There's room. I mean, there's room to take people in. I was lucky enough to live and work in America and Australia as a younger man, albeit English-speaking, etc., etc. But I was taken in with open arms in these countries. And I know we're not, it's not like for like, as an example. But within reason, these people are coming from, many of them come from war-torn countries. And I know there's narratives out there that some of them aren't desirables and what have you. But looking at it as a whole, I think we have to be Christian about this and try and help these people out where possible.
And I'm not in any way being argumentative, Harry, but I must ask, as others might ask, if a house next door to you was an application went in to convert it to house 20 IPAS applicant, would your view be the same if they were to move into a house next door to you?
Yeah, that's a good question, Greg. I don't know, but I don't have to go too far away from where I'm living now at the moment to have foreign nationals, you know, effectively on our doorstep within a mile as both lays, you know, so I don't know, a million miles away. But I do know what you're saying. And it's very simplistic, my answer to say live and let live. But So I know where you're coming from. You're obviously you've got to try and get every side of the story.
Yeah, exactly. And I know you're on as a guest. It's just that because obviously all of our opinions kind of feed into policy to some extent. So everyone's individual. Exactly.
It's not a black and white issue, Greg. There's a whole pile of grey in there. You know, I don't think there's a right answer either side of the divide. You know, if you say let everybody in. That's, you know, there'll be dissension to that. If you say that nobody in, there'll be dissension to that. Mm-hmm. So I do accept there's a whole massive grey in the middle somewhere.
But as you say, and maybe the answer is within your answer to some extent as well. I mean, you're able to highlight the counties that have taken the majority of greatest proportion, and you go to the sunny suburbs of the leafy suburbs of Dublin, you won't see any applications for the conversion of premises into iPass centres. And I think that's what irks some.
True, Greg. And I was when yesterday evening I looked up some of the figures. I'm surprised to see Monaghan's got very, very few. Mm. And yet I've read in recent days that a couple of businessmen in Monaghan have made an awful lot of money out of these centres, but they've obviously haven't put them on their own doorstep. So that answers your question.
Well, there's five applications from one Monaghan-based company for iPass centres in Donegal, which is quite remarkable. Christy Galligan in studio with me. What's your take on it?
Sadly, we saw the demonstrations there at the weekend. I know everybody's right to protest in relation to pro and anti-immigration in this country, but there's 320 sites, iPass sites nationwide in this country, four in Donegal alone. 33,000 people have been accommodated, and I think we're doing very well in relation to accommodating people who seek asylum in this country. The big issues here, we had a concerns here recently, and even in Letterkenny, outside Letterkenny, where a house was being, an application was made for an iPass centre to convert it into an iPass centre, and the locals demonstrated, and I think it's now on the back burner. As far as I know, I'm not aware, but I think it's on the back burner. And that's the concerns for a lot of people, that you have people from different identities, different religions, from different parts of the world, all grouped into, say, one area or one place. As I agree with Harry, the infrastructure may not be there, the services may not be there. It puts a strain on all of these services. And how do we accommodate those people? How do we integrate with them? Are they integrate with us? And that is the biggest problem that we have. I think we have to be very careful too, because we are a country of immigrants ourselves. We've been all over the world, and sometimes we feel that the numbers that are coming into this country and the amount of money that's been paid, I think, for accommodation just for asylum seekers alone is over $1 billion this year, and the cost.
Conversely to that, because often the reason is given that we travel all over the world, and we do, and I'm not taking a position on this. It's to tease out the conversation. The overwhelming majority of those coming into the country are coming in on work visas. Yeah. They're coming from India, Brazil, and elsewhere, working in our health service. Yeah. They're working in our hospitals. They're paying tax and what have you. iPass centres aren't actually for those people who would be the better analogy to the Irish working around the place. We're talking large groups of people, families, but primarily young men coming from countries and then being placed in grouped accommodation in rural areas of Donegal. Do you believe that we need to look at that, or do you believe we need to do our bit? Or
I think we need to look at it holistically. We need to look at it in totality right around the country, because the imposition of placing people without proper consultation with the local people, either through the councils or whatever, or with local people in general. And then there you have to see the demonstrations that come from those IPAS centres, or the rumours of IPAS centres being set up in certain localities. And what happens then? You get the mob rule and you get the extremists coming out. We don't want to see that. We definitely don't want to see it in Donegal.
But in Ballyliffin, it was a majority of local business people, local concerned. Yeah. There was no mob rulers.
I know.
Others wanted to take an interest in that, this was a community.
This is a small community. Ballyliffin is a small community, as you know well, Greg. Like, we both know it fairly well at this stage. but it's a small, very, very small community, and the services wouldn't be there for those IPAS centres or for accommodating in IPAS centres. They need to be in large areas. As you say, and quite rightly so, you'll very rarely see them in the suburbs of Dublin, but they seem to be bypassed and just lumped on the people in country and rural areas which where the services are not available. I think they have to look at that again, and I think, you know... There is another issue I have seen over the years as well, is the vetting of these people that are coming into the country that are not properly vetted.
But you can't vet someone without documentation.
Well, that's the problem. At the present moment in time, somebody claims asylum, then you have to process that asylum and you wait on their bona fides, for whether they came through another country, transited through another European country or from abroad, directly from abroad. So, and we have seen through the Minister for Justice that there are percentages in relation to the number of people coming in here who are genuine people who are genuinely seeking, as opposed to those who are using the asylum system for their own benefit or maybe for nefarious reasons, but one way or the other, that, you know, there has to be a balance there somewhere.
And I mean, like, I do understand how people need to be careful with the language, but it's the government themselves that says the majority are economic migrants.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. It's the state itself, the leaders of the state that are stating this.
And looking at the new draft bill for in relation to immigration as well, where they're trying to now... that you process people within 3 months and you know, there are people being deported, but at a great cost again to the taxpayer when you think of the number of people that are being, you know...
Okay, I'll come back to you. Brendan Byrne, what's your view?
Well, both you and I, Greg, had a discussion on this 2 years ago, and I think on that occasion we predicted we would end up with where we now are, where people would be on the streets. When you have the absence of policy and the how we're catering for these asylum seekers at the minute is driven on commercial decisions and reactionary, the absence of policy, this is what's going to happen. So the first thing that this country needs is a proper, fully integrated immigration policy. And look it, we're starting into a cycle, as I see it, of 30 years of mass immigration from Central Africa, North Africa, right across the Middle East. This is the start of a 30-year cycle where you will see people coming into Europe. We need to get real about this. So we need to have the infrastructure of state. The question you asked in terms of all this objection to the IPAS centres, everyone has the right to object. And when you have, I suppose, the primary source of a lot of information being social media, there's an absence of balance. There's an awful lot of fear within our communities as to what's going into their respective areas and what exactly is involved. So we have no policy here. The greatest fear that communities have is, well, who exactly is coming in here? And the answer to that is no one knows until they arrive.
Well, even after they arrive, no one really
exactly
knows.
They may not know for months, as Sergeant Gallagher said.
What I don't understand is the connection between businesses with multiple IPAS applications right across the country. Is that at the behest of the government? Are they saying, listen, go and find us properties and come back to us? Are they putting these Section 5s in all over the place, sort of rolling the dice, and then going back to the relevant department and saying, right, we've got these? Like, it's not clear to me what the relationship is between the big businesses involved, the relevant department, and you know, maybe the property owners. How does this all... It's not really clear to me. Is the government saying go and find us places, or are these businesses going finding places and then going back to government and saying, look, we've got more space in Donegal? Like, I don't understand how that works. It would be really interesting to find out.
I think it's economic opportunism on the part of a select number of business people. Initially, the government was overwhelmed with the Ukrainian refugees when the war broke out, and from that, then we had more asylum seekers with in greater number than what we had previously. And a number of people got in on the act, as we would say. And from that, they became extremely wealthy. You see the figures published each year. And so it goes back to the kernel of the problem. And that is, we didn't have a proper immigration policy. And I still think we don't have a proper economic. Because if one of the issues that's most concerning, and I hear it in the communities, is, well, if we discover someone has a track record or if they've done something locally, you know, are they still going to stay there? And the answer is more likely they are, because we can't do very much with them until we have policy that would exclude them from the country.
Yeah, it's very nuanced, and everyone, there's lots of different individuals with different backgrounds and all that type of stuff, Christy. But, you know, cultural clashes, integration seems to be a particular problem as well, because, you know, dependent on where we're from, we have, you know, different rules. We see different people in different ways. What you can or can't do might be a little bit different. I'm not really sure I can think of a fantastic example where integration has been gotten right. I don't think we're doing enough. What you're seeing is you're seeing certain parts that you have one section of society in another. Yeah. And there is no, you know, I've seen this before. We'd have seen it in, you know, Birmingham or London or Leeds. We're not learning any international lessons here. And I'm not saying about not bringing people in. I'm on about letting people understand each other, learn about each other, integrate better.
And that's what I said. It seems to be panic-driven, this immigration policy. There seems to be panic-driven, oh my God, look at the numbers coming into the country. Now we have to find them accommodation. Then you have the High Court and the EU courts who waded into this problem in relation to accommodation as well, who've held that there's an obligation to provide people with accommodation once they arrive in this country. Not to provide them just with money alone, but they have to provide them with accommodation. Now, that's the standard. And I think the government really haven't stepped up to the mark when it comes to proper accommodation in relation to asylum seekers. And
well, there is none.
There is none at the present moment in time. They've tried to accommodate as many as they could.
When people say, and they're lambasted for saying it, Ireland is full, right? And I'm not going down the line here.
No.
They're not talking about the land. Yeah. They're on about the services. The Letterkenny University Hospital is full. My local GP centre is full. I can't get a dental appointment. It's full. I can't get my child into this school. That's what people are saying, but it's weaponized against them to imply that they're saying it's full of people. The services they're saying are full.
Yeah, the services are full, and the problem is, no matter how much money you throw at something, it doesn't fix the problem.
So where are we at? What do we need to do? The government needs to take Donegal off the table in terms of its capacity to accommodate refugees / asylum seekers at this
point until they come up with, as I agree with your previous speakers, a proper integrated policy that's put in place that accommodates everybody, but not just in the rural parts of Ireland or the satellite counties along the West Coast. You know, I mean, they have to look at where the services are and where they can provide those services.
And what is particularly challenging in this situation, Harry, is, and again, you know, I am not saying there aren't elements that get involved in these conversations for their own benefits, but the majority of people went out last weekend for the right reasons, as they saw it, whether they were pro or anti. You know what I mean? These were regular people, our friends and neighbours. They weren't, you know, I mean, obviously there was some people that came into the county, but that's fine. The problem people feel, Harry, and I wonder what you think about it, is it's about fairness. Right, so let's say, just in terms of rental, there's an advantage of €600 per week if you're a Ukrainian in the rental market. We've got people begging every day on Facebook for alternative accommodation whilst their house is getting rebuilt. Yet we're trying to convert 150 bedroomed hotels to accommodate others. It's about sort of fairness. You'll see recently free GP visits for the Roma community was announced by the HSC. And if you can't get a GP appointment for a week in Buncrana, you're looking on going, what? And I think that drives an awful lot of this, Harry. People feel it's unfair, you know, that the cards are stacked against them. Would you sympathise?
Yeah, and excuse the pun, that is unfair, Greg, because, I mean, you're right. And that's what social media is driving a lot of this. As you say, that they're throwing out facts and figures, and they're not fact-checked. Some of them aren't fact-checked. But you're right. Your basic facts there are correct. You know, back earlier on, we mentioned about integrating them into our communities and what have you. Local GA clubs are the nub of most rural communities in the county and indeed the country. They're trying to integrate a lot of these foreign nationals into their respective clubs, but they don't. I mean, for starters, they don't speak the language. You get over that, you know. But they don't know whether they're here for a week, a month, or a year, or 10 years. So it's very hard to try and integrate somebody into your community if you don't know they're going to be part of your community this time next week, this time next month. And as Brandon rightly says, until we have some form of formal structure in place, because again, I'm a father of three young adults, and if I had a property in town and I was guaranteed getting X amount a week, a month, a year, and going to my bank account, I mean, your human nature tells you you do that. It's, in quotation marks, it's handy money. And there are a small number of people making handy money, making an awful lot of money. And it's very hard to square that circle. So you're right. People are, you know, you want to go to your doctor and you can't get a doctor's appointment. Yeah. And yet Mr. X down the road can get an appointment and his family can,
and
et cetera,
I think, too, what a good example of where people are is, say, for instance, Bundoran. Yes. And we'd all know, but I think, Brendan, too, you would know as much as anyone being further south in the county, is that Bundoran, through the boom years, I would say at one point the population was almost 3-1 Eastern Europe to Bundoran people, and no one cared. Everyone got on with it. Now, there has been an IPAS centre, it seems, that has been identified with a tiny amount of people, but they don't know who they are and they're concerned about it, and it's causing a lot of uncertainty and a furore. But history tells us the people of Bundoran are very open and welcoming, yet, you know, they've been pushed into this situation. It's hard to speak about it, or it's hard to put your head above the parapet because you might get labelled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge. People want to keep you down by implying that your concerns are racially motivated or something. And the people I know who have concerns are not, they aren't those type of people. Mm-hmm. Chris, do you want a last word?
Yeah, I think that you're right there, Greg, because, you know, people are being categorised now. If you're pro or anti, you're racist, or you're somehow just going to be discriminatory against certain groups of people. I don't think that's... There is a vast majority of...
Like, I know gay people that were marching last weekend.
Yeah.
And in the counter-protest, they were marching because they had concerns about administration.
Yeah.
And there was a counter-protest with pride flags waving.
Yeah.
As if that if you were on one side of this argument that you couldn't also be gay.
Oh, yes. I agree with you there. People have a diverse points of view, and they'll either pro or anti, it doesn't matter. But what they do, what they're trying to tell in both, I think in both camps, is their concerns are real concerns, that their inherent problems in relation to immigration haven't been resolved by the central government. Right. And that's the biggest problem.
Brendan,
we have.
Brendan Byrne wanted to come back in there.
Yeah, sorry.
Brendan, no, yeah, no, it's fine.
I think you made a very good point, Greg. Look, we've seen so much migrant activity in different towns and villages throughout Donegal, and by and large, it is gone very positively, in fairness. I remember my own village welcoming Ukrainians, and we had social nights and all that. But the reality is this IPAS and asylum seekers is where it's going to be for the next 30 years. And until the government come in with a robust approach in order to restore confidence in our communities, this situation is going to get a lot worse very quickly. And I think in order to have the confidence of the people back, you know, we're going to have a zero tolerance. If there are issues found out on anyone, they're on a plane within 48 hours and out. That is the level of measures that I think can restore confidence.
And you can be fair to genuine asylum seekers in that process as well. Mm. As harsh as that sounds, you can also be, you can operate a fair system.
Those that have nothing to fear won't fear that rule. But what I'm trying to pitch is we've got to such a bad juncture that something as draconian as that is going to be needed in order to restore the equilibrium, because there is a very polarised society out there.
Yeah, and it's not an easy conversation to have either, if the truth be told. And also, to believe it or not, there are people on the left and right of the political spectrum that don't like these things talked about on media for different reasons. Right, okay, that was the voice and continues to be the voices of Harry Walsh, Brendan Byrne, Christy Galligan. We're going to be talking more issues after we take a break. Stay where you are. Our historian in residence, Dr. Joe Kelly, he's got Pope Leo the 14th as far as Cork. I presume he's still endeavouring to get him to the northwest. But Pope Leo the 14th's grandmother, Hannah O'Keefe, was born in Cullen, North Cork, and emigrated to the US in 1910. So we're getting closer, although it couldn't be further away. Right. Hi, Greg. Denmark has a reasonable immigration policy where it puts the needs of its own citizens above those of foreign nationals. Yeah, that speaker is saying that there should be a balance, and correct, he is our government didn't give the defective blockhouse owners their full support. They dragged everything out. Send all these centres to Donegal, but don't help our own people there. No, thank you. So I don't mind people not supporting these centres. I know it's two different scenarios, but that's my view. Did anyone look at Grit Media's list of people and money made? Well, everyone has access to that. You just happen to see it on Gripped. It's been published everywhere. The panel is like the same bias 10 years ago. Even the ex-Garda whistleblower John Wilson has spoken and supported the marches. I don't think anyone's been critical of the marches. It's funny, the ears hear sometimes what they want to hear, and I'll try and push past that on this programme. You know, I've talked about issues on this show in Ballyliffin, and at the same time as we're at literally having a conversation an hour deep, someone will text in and say, oh, but you won't talk about the situation in Ballyliffin, will you? Hi, Greg. Our councillors are actively colluding in the invasion of Donegal. Shame on them. It's I don't think that language is fantastic, because I don't think it helps the cause and it makes people sound like they're... But anyway, listen... what the councillors did, they issued a statement saying that Donegal was a welcoming country. They didn't sign opposing the march. That's just been misconstrued over the week, it seems. Greg, these young men coming in, they don't want to work. They're intimidating women and young girls and young boys. The government's given them handouts. Nothing for the Irish person. Right, okay, and more coming in. RTE has asked the European Broadcasting Union for a discussion on Israel's inclusion in the Eurovision Song Contest. Director General Kevin Backhurst has said in a statement, he said, I'm appalled by the ongoing events in the Middle East and by the horrific impact on civilians in Gaza and the fate of Israeli hostages. So, you know, whilst it is a song competition and pales into complete insignificance compared to what's ongoing at the moment, you know, many would see Israel's expulsion as sending a significant message, maybe shaming them on a national stage, international stage, I don't know. With all that in mind, because I find it hard to talk about a song contest in the context of what's going on, but it is relevant too. I'll start with you first, Harry. I don't think I've started with you yet. What approach do you think Ireland should take in this regard, or even the competition? And maybe talk to the wider issues there as well, of course. Feel free to do whatever you want to do.
No problem, Greg. There was a letter, 72 former contestants put in a letter earlier in the week, including their own Charlie McGettigan. And they're advocating that Israel is expelled from this year's competition. And they're arguing that in 2022, Russia was expelled following its invasion of Ukraine. And they're saying it's a hypocrisy now, is that Israel going this year, whereas they expelled Russia 2 years ago. And the national broadcaster in Israel, KAN, and they're in this letter, they're saying they're complicit in Israel's genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. And they're saying that, you know, that we all know, unfortunately, what's going on in Israel and Palestine is not, it's horrendous. And you're right, it's just a song contest. And but maybe you have to start somewhere, maybe you have to take a stance somewhere. And this is where they feel they have to make the stance. And they're saying, There is a history there before with what happened with Russia 2 years ago, so that's the background to it. And as I say, you can't defend what's happening.
I mean,
Gaza.
It is just to the wider point. You know, like we were shocked in the early stages. Firstly, of course, we were all absolutely horrified and disgusted and shocked with the October 7th attack. Innocent people torn to bits, hostages taken that remain captive. Absolutely unforgivable. But what followed and what now has been announced is Israel effectively taking over Gaza indefinitely and herding those in Gaza to the south of the country. And kind of the world watches on, Brendan Byrne. The world watches on, really, if the truth be told, to the point whereby it's kind of third or fourth page in the newspapers. And you know, that's not the editor's choice. It's about, you know, what makes people pick papers up off the shelf as well, too. So it's about the public's interest in this.
I think if you look at all the crises that we've seen in our lifetime, I don't think we've ever seen anything of the magnitude of Gaza. where you have 60,000 people murdered by a sovereign state, namely Israel. You have forced famine as we speak on the show in Gaza. Food cannot be sent in there. Medicines cannot be sent in there. There's children looking for cancer care. They can't get out of there. This is genocide. And there's no other words for it. And it doesn't rest easy on me that we're discussing a song contest.
No, and that's why I've kind of tried to...
When we're in the actual real time of, you know, genocide in our lifetime,
but I think
we'll never see it again.
Exactly, and hopefully we don't. But this is the point. And this is where it's insignificant, but significant at the same time. In that, and it was to my point that we watch on as this happens, we are talking about an international event. Let's say it's show jumping or football, whatever it might be. But in this case, it happens to be a song contest, whereby the country that's sponsoring that will be a part of that. And we could be on the stage in front of them, or we could be on the stage after them. And if I was in Gaza and I had access to a television or electricity, which I wouldn't have, and I looked at that, with everything else that's going on to me, it would compound it beyond disbelief. And that's where this silly song contest inserts itself in this wider conversation.
It probably would compound it beyond belief for 5 to 6 seconds until the next explosive goes off from an Israeli army tank or such like. But we must prepare ourselves for a new world. America has gone rogue. That's the facts of the matter. However long Trump will be there, he's no longer going to be the leader of the Western world. And we have real issues that are going to be there in Israel, most likely in Ukraine, or wherever else Russia wants to invade next. And this is the new global dynamic that we're in. And the facts, and we're talking about maybe the European Union afterwards, they have tried their best, but they're powerless. To be fair,
yeah, and also too, in Moscow today we have Russia representing, with China present, the leader of China with the leader of Brazil and other dignitaries as well. That's a big power block. I'll come back to you. Go ahead, Christy.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I agree with everything Harry said there in relation to the participation of Israel in the Eurovision Song Contest. But we should look back at historically at other countries as well. Look, we had 30 years of violence and war in our own country here, and where we had the UK in Northern Ireland participating in state collusion and certain things. We never excluded them from the. From the song contest, we have Eastern European countries who are supportive of Russia. Are we going to exclude those? We have even EU ministers, MEPs, who are from certain countries within the EU who are now over doing Victory Day over with Vladimir Putin. Should we exclude those from the song contest? What's happening in Gaza is appalling, and he's right to call it. It is genocide.
That was Brendan Ann. Brendan Ann.
Sorry,
Ben. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it is genocide. First and foremost, nothing else can equate with it. You're starving a population, that is genocide. I agree with them totally in relation to that. But if we're going to look at the song contest in totality, and I haven't watched it, believe it or not,
no,
in the last
I
couple
know.
Of years,
because it's becoming ridiculous. It is, and Brendan alluded to this, and so did Harry, in the context of what's happening there, it's insignificant, but it's not insignificant either.
No, it's not insignificant, but if we're looking at all aspects, even in sporting venues, we have to look at everything in totality. We just can't look, say, right, the song contest really excludes Israel. Look, let us look at sporting events.
Well, I think the problem is, I think these conversations get so complicated is because no one's whiter than white.
No, absolutely not.
You know, no one's fully innocent in any of this. I mean, like, you know, what should we stop the bombs being transported through Shannon or ban Israel from a song contest? And I mean, if we're going to be serious, you can't be an a la carte sort of anti-Israel here.
Well,
you know?
I mean, we're talking about, you know, the American participation, or you want collusion with Israel in relation to what's happening in Gaza, and some of the rhetoric that has come out from Trump and the administration is absolutely appalling. Should we exclude America from, say, world soccer or other sporting events because of their collusion with Israel. You have to look at it in totality, not in just in one aspect alone in relation to soccer.
Yeah, but no one's copybook is unblotted.
Oh, no, that's absolutely not.
So
absolutely not.
I mean, at the end of the day, was Israel was continuing to wage its war. We went over and broke bread with Donald Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. So it's a bit of a hypocrisy in it.
A tough one, Harry, isn't it? You know, it's a tough one. But I think the people want us to feel that we're doing something. You know that we're not standing.
Pardon me. Exactly, Greg. It's one of those ones. You're right. No one's white is white, and you know, no one can put the head above the parapet and, you know, speak with authority on that. You know, so it's in itself, the song contest means nothing. But maybe if it just sets that standard and says, listen, in enough's enough, because obviously as a country we can't go waiting in there and sort out problems in the Middle East and what have you. You know, but maybe if we do make a stance. It might be small, but from small ripples, large waves can come. And you know,
I
think that rather than excluding them, because that's what Israel will anticipate, exclusion. They in their own domestic political sphere, they say they're marginalised, they're victimised. I would much prefer to have them in the contest and greet them with silence.
That can be quite impactful. And as I said to Charlie McGettigan yesterday, I think, you know, It's if RT want to take a stand, mute their performance. You know, that would be more impactful than anything. If you really want to, writing letters and all is a smokescreen. Okay, interesting stuff as always. We are going to be talking about our interest in the EU, or lack thereof, dependent. Anyway, support for Ireland's membership of the European Union has dropped to its lowest level since 2013, a new opinion poll has suggested. However, the annual European Movement Ireland poll still found strong backing for Ireland's membership of the EU at 82%, though 43% of us do not believe our views are represented at EU level. Maybe you haven't heard from your MEP since the last election. I don't know. Brendan Byrne, you take a particular interest in matters in the EU, as we all do, but much of the industry you represent, the strings are pulled in Europe.
Absolutely. The fishing sector is the one sector of the economy where it's 100% governed by all matters from Europe and from the Commission and DG Mara. We have very little political autonomy in Ireland in terms of the policies, rules and regulations govern fishing, apart from how we interpret those policies. Look, I think what Ireland is saying, in line with the rest of Europe, they don't fully understand this full integration that Ursula von der Leyen is pursuing. And even if you take for a matter the militarisation now of the EU, I've never voted in a referendum where I saw that coming. So that's going to cause a lot of unease. And more locally here, we see the regulations coming in terms of our peatlands, in terms of all that we do in farming and the nitrates directives. All that is impacting on what we're thinking of Europe. But let's be clear, the Project Europe is a good project, but we need to be very careful of where we're heading. And we seem to be heading rapidly in a direction that we just don't know, or we certainly didn't vote for.
And of course, you never waste a good crisis, do you? And what's happening in Ukraine can be used to accelerate what the big powers might be. Harry, I think sometimes really our view on Europe is how we feel about ourselves. You know, our sentiment, if our life feels good. I think after post the last recession, our attitude towards Europe fell, and when times are good, we seem to like Europe. I wonder, are we thinking about Europe or just our place in Europe when we're asked these questions?
Fair point, Greg. I think we're all busy in our own wee lives. We're busy with what's happening in Donegal and with what's happening in Ulster and with what's happening in Ireland. And by the time we get to Europe, we're nearly battle scarred and tired and what have you. But in light of we mentioned a couple of times already today, President Trump and the tariffs, and that's one area where Europe, where it'll concentrate minds, that as a trading bloc, that it should help us as a trading bloc to fight that.
My mind goes back to Brexit, where we were chucked under the bus, and I just wonder if pharmaceuticals and FDI would be chucked under the bus in any negotiations with Trump. But I'm just a natural born cynic, and I'm getting worse the older I get.
Yeah, you said Brexit. I read some of this Brexit now. I don't know how to pronounce it, but IRE exit. You know, Ireland leaving it. You know,
but I think even the Herman Kellys of this world have given up on that to some extent. I think they've conceded. They can't really switch that, and they're just going down more the nationalist route. A minute to you, Christy Galligan. Yeah,
there is a perceived disconnect. There is a perceived.
That's all right. Batter on, you'll be grand.
Perceived
His
disconnect.
Knob's falling off here.
There's a perceived disconnect between the EU and young people in general, and there was a 2023 survey in relation to some European countries where young people between the ages of 16 and 30, if you call them, well, I'm a 60 plus, felt rather disconnected from the EU and switched off from the EU because there was the feeling of disengagement and there was an emotional disenchantment or disengagement from the EU in itself. So there's a big... most people feel that since the EU, we're inundated with policies and procedures and legislation that hampers countries' autonomies as well, like Ireland, and something that we're no longer driven by local policies or local legislation. We're driven by EU legislation, and some people feel that is an interference.
Well, it took probably 20 years of reporting on bendy bananas and noisy lawnmowers for the British to be convinced to get out. Listen, Christy, I know there's much more to say in it, but unfortunately time has caught up on us. Thank you so very much for calling in. I really do appreciate it. Harry, lovely to have you on the show as always. Chat to you soon. Have a lovely weekend. Take care. And Brendan Byrne, same to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care. We'll be back talking about a big motor show, actually, and much more besides in the second hour of the show. But we'll take a break now for the news and obituary notices.